In the first four chapters, he sort of outlines the problem as he sees it, and it focuses a little bit on the Christianity in real life. He thinks Christianity in real life ought to be the same and not be separated from one another, because if you are a Christian, it's the real life that you're called to live. Or as Paul Beeman was saying last night, the person that you get to be is the person that God meant you to be as you have been freed by faith in Christ to become fully who you are. So it isn't a different kind of person or a different world that you live in, but the real life and Christianity is the same. And he stresses that rhythm of the church's life, which gathers people together for worship and education and for fellowship and community of being together, and then the scattering of them out to their jobs. And he feels that our failure has often been that we don't get over gathering long enough to even to scatter the people where they belong, out in the world doing their jobs. And in quoting Luther, being little Christs to everyone, and finding in all the things that they use, in the tools that they use, in the processes that they're involved in finding in those their ministry. So that's the pattern that he is talking about. Then yesterday we talked about the four ways he thinks that can be sort of practically worked out, or at least he feels that this is where we ought to be starting. And he thinks there are four, at least four kinds of ministry. The ministry of the aid person, the person who, like the military aid, medical aid, is closest to what's going on and is able to be either of immediate help or detect where the problems or the possibilities are and put the people who may be in need or the people with possibilities in touch with those they have to be in touch with. So rather than being back of the lines in the battalion hospital or being in a parish away from where things are happening in the world, the lay people are out there and they ought to be considered these aid people who are alert to what's going on in the world. Secondly, he talks about a ministry of words and how we find ways to initiate conversation about our faith and about our Lord that doesn't turn the other people off. He thinks that in the workaday world, it's extremely difficult to do that. That whereas in private life, in social situations, it might be easier, but in the midst of a business discussion, or part of that, or in the factory, or in wherever else it may be, he thinks it is not quite that easy to do, and he thinks that things have to be done. But he thinks that's an important part of the ministry of words. The third is the ministry of ethics, the decisions and choices, which are, he thinks, much more complex than simply saying we ought to be honest. For many times there are two or three options, all of which may not be fully honest, and you have to pick one of those in order to be in the job that you're in, or in the relationship that you're in. Or it may be that the illustration he has of one fellow who is early on was hired for a job he really wasn't competent in, and then is kept in the job over the period of years until he's 45 years old, and then it becomes Mr. Deal's job to deal with him of his incompetency at age 45 when he won't be able to get another job. Now, what is the Christian thing to do at that moment? A very difficult kind of a decision. And he talks about doing that. In this area of ministry of ethics or decisions, he thinks that the Christian community ought to be supplying the support and the bases for the decisions, but the people from the world in which all these decisions have to be made, of the public sector and the private sector and educational sector and business sector, wherever that may be, ought to be working together to help one another make some of those decisions, either in small groups of people who just are committed to working together, or in people from different areas of life, businessmen working together or medical men working together or whatever it may be. He thinks that's an extremely difficult one, and we ought to be doing more to help that happen. The last one is the ministry of the change agent, which is the ministry of those who, when they see something going wrong, that is destructive in the society, which may be in education, may be in family life, may be in medical services, may be in union work, and may be in dehumanization in a factory, whatever it may be. What can you do to help not only help an individual who is struggling with that, but maybe change the system that wrecks other people, whether these be the be minorities or people who don't have an education that they would like to have? How do you go about that? And that kind of what he calls the ministry of a change agent. How do you help people not only get over their present problem, but so that the problem doesn't keep coming back again and again and again? And he thinks that's a ministry that we need a lot of help in. And he feels the congregation, in addition to its gathering, celebrating of the Eucharist, baptizing people, educating people, ought to also be providing some kind of help to train people for a ministry of the aid person, a ministry of words, a ministry of ethics or decisions and choices, and a ministry of being a change agent. So that's sort of what he's about. In the last two chapters, he talks about how do we get started on it, and we spent a little time yesterday trying to do a little of that by getting some ideas from congregations and what they might be trying or what are ways we could go about it in the congregation. I'd like to start out today by giving you a bit of a report on the study that I mentioned yesterday that I did with 29 congregations, most of them Lutheran, most of them in the Chicago area, back in 1970 to 72. And it was a study that was designed to find out which congregations are taking their lay people seriously. And what we did, we didn't go out and say, here's what it means to take your lay people seriously. We went to these congregations, and over a longer period of time, 9 months if I recall, it took almost 11 months, we let them decide what it meant to take the lay people seriously. What is the ministry of the laity? As the people, members of the congregations and pastors, talked about it, or as they would describe it. We didn't say, all right, let's put up on the board what it is, but we talked to them about all the things that are happening, and then we'd say, well, is that what you mean when you say ministry of the laity? And if they would say yes, then that would be part of it, and if they would say no, we'd go on to others. After a period of time, this is the way what we found out. We didn't know we would find anything out, we didn't know we would find this out, but this is what the ministry of the laity meant to these people in these congregations. And we, by the way, when we shared this with them, they, after a while, they said, yep, that's right, that's pretty accurate. So I don't mean to say this is true about anywhere else. It's true about the 29 congregations, but I don't know where else it would be. What they meant, first of all, was things to do at church. By that they meant going there for worship, going there for study, going there for committee meetings, going there for training, going there to help keep the place clean or whatever else it was. The ministry of the laity was to do things at the church. The second thing that the ministry of the laity meant to these people was getting others to do things at church. By that it meant if people, your members in your family, or you brought them along, or the neighbors, you brought them along, or if people were backsliding, you worked on them to get over to the church and do things there. Again, it might be attending a worship service, a special service, an adult class, it might be a confirmation class, whatever it was, but the object of the ministry of the laity in this understanding was to get people, more people, to do things at church. The third understanding
of the ministry of the laity was to do your best in your vocation.
And by this they meant, if you were a Christian and you were a plumber, then you ought to be the very best plumber you can be because you are a Christian. And that would mean be honest, that would mean do the work the way that you really were convinced were the best to do, so that in all that you did as a plumber, you would be reflecting the fact that you were a Christian. And that it would be different. People may notice or may not notice, but the point is, you were committed to the very best of your abilities in whatever job that you had, whether it was a housewife or a plumber or an educator or a medical person or whoever that would be. That was the third. The fourth area of ministry of the laity was understood by these congregations was to help others in need or to reach their potential. In other words, there were people who weren't in the best shape, whether that was healthy or in terms of a job or whatever else it may be. Or there were people who, although they were surviving all right, they may not be surviving, but if they were surviving all right, they weren't anywhere near what they could be. And so this was a concern because of Jesus Christ to be helping others who were in need. Wherever these may be, this would be not necessarily anything that happened over at the church. It could, but mostly was anywhere else, wherever that may be. That was the ministry of the laity. And the final part of ministry of the laity was to share what any or all of this has to do with that, what doing things at church has to do with Jesus Christ. Because they could be very active there, would maybe not even know or be aware of what that has to do with Jesus Christ. Why would anybody be there? Is it because I feel bad if I don't go? Or is it because my grandmother always went? Or is it because my parents forced me? Or whatever it may be. How does that relate to Jesus Christ? Or how does getting others to do things at church relate to Jesus Christ? Or how does doing your best in your vocation relate specifically to Jesus Christ? What is that to do with that? Or how does helping others in need or reaching their potential relate to Jesus Christ? Any or all of those was seen as this fifth one over here. Okay? Now, the trouble with the study was that at least, and these figures, there are no accurate figures, these are good guesses, I think they're conservative guesses, so I'll say that. 85% of the people thought that's what the ministry of the laity was. The first one. Thought it was the second one.
Does that mean they didn't, that 5% didn't think it was?
Yeah, the two. Another 5%. So it would be 90% thought these two were what the ministry of the laity was about. About 6% thought that this one, that would be 96, 2%, or 3%, I think it was here, and 1% here. So that most of the people in the congregation, by far, thought the ministry of the laity was what you do at church, or what you get others to do at church. Another percent included this, the 6% that had this. They felt this, but would include that too. Only 3% would include the other as being the ministry of the laity. And only 1% felt that had anything to do with the ministry of the laity. This was almost exclusively seen as the minister's job, the professional ordained clergyman's job over here. This was seen largely as people outside of the church's job. And this was seen only partially as a Christian job, very minimal. And when we shared that with people, as I said, in those congregations, as we didn't get to every one of the 29, but most of them, they said, yeah, that's pretty accurate, by the way we see it. They didn't say, we had discussions about whether they liked it or not and all that, but that was a fairly good rundown of where those congregations were at that time.
In word ministry, mm-hmm. How limiting is that word itself? When we use the word ministry, is that...
Have we already said church?
Excuse me?
Have we already said church?
And also, is it synonymous with service?
Yeah. We tried a couple of some other words, and what we found then, it was difficult to talk to church people about it.
Uh-huh.
I think there is some limitation in that.
I mean, because the other side of the question is what is it in our life that isn't
that doesn't follow? That's right. Or what is the work of, if you say, what is the work of the people of God, and then they tend to think, in another direction, too. It's a very different. But when the ministry of the laity is preached, when pastors will say what they preach about it, they claim to be preaching about all of that. They felt that's what they were covering. But it was quite clear to them that their own understanding was really over here, and they felt strongly that's what the lay people understood also and meant by it.
But it looks to me like that's a very nice list until you put those percentages under it, and then think, oh, your heart sinks and things shut.
Yeah, and as I said, that we didn't dream that up. That really came out of the conversations. I kept the verbatim records of many of the conversations I had with individual lay people, lay boards, planning committees, church councils, and all of these things, as well as with pastors. And that's what we came.
I know that he does it to raise points across, but one thing that bothers me with Beale's model
mm-hmm.
is, I guess I'd say, it's too simplistic.
Mm-hmm.
We're not divided into four roles.
Mm-hmm.
We all play all those roles, and sometimes you play them simultaneously.
Yeah.
It's almost like the Latin phrase you use every day.
Similar, yeah.
That sometimes at the same time we are ministering and need to be ministered to.
Right.
In fact, that's the whole complication of it for me, is that in my work, it's pretty clear in my mind. When my responsibility is as change agent, when I am ministering to
mm-hmm.
others, and the whole list of his various four roles.
Mm-hmm.
What is not as clear to me is when I need to be the one that is turning
to receive
help. Mm-hmm. And also that's harder. It's harder to be to receive than to give. Much harder, at least for me. That troubles me in his model, and I think that there's probably a day at work that some situation doesn't come up that I really would like to be able to turn to a fellow Christian,
mm-hmm.
not for an answer, but to reflect with. And we don't know how to do that for each other.
Do you think his operating with that small group perhaps satisfied some of that need for him? And that's why maybe he doesn't do as good a job as pointing up that need.
Well,
On the other hand, you might think that if he did see, is getting there, it ought to have been obvious to him. I don't know.
I sure do think that somebody who is in a top position in Bethlehem still must have an awful lot of ethical and moral questions looking around in his mind.
Yeah, I think any book is normally a teaching device, and you divide it up and sort of so people can follow you. But what you say is you run the risk then of making it sound like it's all pieces, when really truly, as you say, things happen so simultaneously. And in addition to that, as you're saying, my own need of being at that moment, I mean, the very moment that I need to be most helpful to another person by listening to them, I need to be strengthened by somebody else. Somebody else.
Well, I don't think I was very helpful just then, but I'll give an example of what I mean.
Sure.
And try it out on the group. When Proposition 13, well, prior to the Proposition 13, my particular program at University of Southern California was, the university didn't give me any trouble. They didn't particularly even know I was there. I direct something called the Institute for Changing Ministries. And we offer training programs for clergy and lay leaders. But it doesn't bring in a lot of money. And nor does it make any trouble. It just is there. They pay attention to important things like football teams and things that bring in the money that supports the university. But when Proposition 13 occurred, suddenly my program was one of the few channels of communication to the community that surrounds the university, an inner city community particularly Hispanic and Oriental and Black person. Suddenly the university knew I was there, and suddenly they wanted to make use of me and make use of my the program I direct, but not in very healthy ways. And so this created a real ethical dilemma. If I didn't cooperate, it could really put the program in a tight spot. If I did cooperate, it was really prostituting the purpose of the program. And I tried to take the problem to two or three members of my congregation, and they couldn't see because I probably couldn't articulate very well. And because they wanted to give me a solution, I'm sure, but that wasn't too easy to do. And I think that this is precisely what Beale is talking about. See,
yes,
and
really?
It's there for everybody all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That, and I would like to suggest that perhaps one of the most important ministries of laity is the ministry to the community. That is, there's nothing wrong with that thing to
That's
do
right.
in the church.
All right. None, all of those, I think, are wholly legitimate ministry of the laity. I do.
It may be that if we knew how to be really a community to one another, of support and love within our congregation, that And if we really knew how to do that, if we really knew what it means, for instance, when we come together around the Lord's table, when we sit together, when we work together, play together, that would nourish us so much for when we go out there, that would be the most significant ministry we could give.
Someone else? Got your own ideas? Question? Sure.
Well, here's another aspect of the situation. I sometimes wonder what in the recent Northwest Airlines strikes, although I'm not in any way connected with aviation, I sometimes wonder what the part of the Northwest Airlines into what dedicated Christians did. I mean, I think one of the things for a decline in the churches is that, now this is true of quite a few churches, they won't face the problems of modern society. They talk about the woman of the well and the prodigal son, but they will make no effort whatsoever to bring Jesus into the present society. So the people go to church and they go to sleep and they just get out.
That's a good point. They could have kept us all from getting to the National Convention. In fact, they kept that
striker. Yeah. but I'm in the library profession myself, and we don't have unions yet, but I imagine that it must put a person in an awful, agonizing situation. He knows that by Christian principles, to deny services is morally wrong, yet he's powerless to do anything about it. So what does he do?
I wonder how many churches discuss that very situation when that or any other strike is on, but you know, at least made it an issue of forum.
I think also a lot of, I mean, we do have an inertia in some of the churches too. In other words, I'm afraid that some of the clergy have the reputation has been too timid to really face the issues. In other words, they like to take their theological training and deal with something that's safe and not going to offend anyone. So they don't discuss these issues. And when the issue comes, the layman is just completely baffled what to do.
But who says that the clergy person is or should be the one who can best discuss the issues?
Besides the fact that we in the laity are probably determining, I mean, like you said another day, as far as the clergy is concerned, we get what we ask for because we really don't want them to speak to these terribly controversial issues because of what it might do in our congregations and things. So if he just sticks to the woman at the well, then, you know, he won't offend anyone.
There's that side of it, but there may be someone sitting in that congregation who, one or more, who are much more knowledgeable about the issue. Mm-hmm. What is it the clergyman or woman needs to do in order to allow and enable that person to become available?
Is it the clergyman's position to do that, or our own position to go, you know, form these groups? Isn't that what Deal is suggesting? That it isn't up to the clergyman to form these laity groups, it's the laity that need to do it themselves.
But is there a role for the clergy person to, let's say the group is formed, and let's say we have a really knowledgeable lay person who understands that issue. Maybe, I don't know, but maybe there is a special role for the clergy person to at least be able to give some dimension or interpretation of an issue from...
Absolutely, but I heard him saying that perhaps the fault was with the clergy,
yeah.
And I, you know, after the group is formed, then we surely ought to go. If the clergy can give us some help, let's by all means go and get it, but...
On the other hand, the clergy has the theological training that the layman does not have, or the knowledge of Scripture that often the layman does not have. And I think if he can, he should, in a way, to relate.
But see, if he doesn't understand how a strike works or how a union operates, he has a tough time saying how that theology fits over here. That's his goal. I mean, I would, assuming the best. That's what he'd really like to do. It may be only when the laity being together with him would say, here are all of the things that are going on. Is there some way that the Christian message speaks to this? What are the things there? Not to resolve the problem, because I suspect fully that he hasn't got that much to say about how to resolve, for instance, an airline strike, or even to say to another person, well, the only possible thing you could do is this. But he might be able to say, well, in that situation, it seems that scriptures are saying these things here that you've got to look at and then make a choice in there. But boy, I know I'd be hard pressed. I can tell you when you belong to a union, I used to belong to one once, what happens there. I don't know the complexity of that, this particular one, no way. I know a couple places, again, I think I mentioned one, there's an ALC church in Park Forest, Illinois, where the lay people lead and choose the topics for their adult studies, and they get sometimes clergy to come in, but often as not have people from outside. And they often have these very issues. And almost always those issues are led by lay people. And boy, the discussions are, the pastor has a tough time keeping up with the discussion. And I don't mean only discussion about Northwest Illinois, if that's what it would be, but about the theological implications, because they're already drawing their own. They've been in the faith for quite some time. They've been studying the scriptures and listening to loads of people.
But wouldn't you also say that also, as far as the lay people are concerned, they have to be motivated and want to be led and want to find the Christian answers before anything can be done? Would you say that?
I think that's the cycle. The pastor is part of that motivation, and part of that motivation, I think, comes out of the God's gift of grace to all of us. And it's a tough one to say, now where do we plug in? Which one is going to have to happen first? I think that's what one of the things Holman's about, is to try and stir some of it up. With clergy who are here, there's plenty that have been around this summer, and with laity.
In the meantime, one thing that I'm finding out is we also need more, how can I put it? I wish in our church we had more frequent communion. I want the gathering to become even more significant than it is. It's like the more that you use the example, gave us the opportunity to use a growing love relationship this morning. And that one thing about that example is that I think as the closer you get to your community of the church, the closer you want to get.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to just form a lot of real specific issue groups to discuss problems. We need to always look at the balance.
Yeah, and I would hope, again, that those wouldn't be just problems, but also reaching potential.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also think that though the church may have been focused on the gathering for a long time, we haven't really done all too well with that either.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I'm struggling with that, whether the larger the group, the closer the community is. I don't know. Our pattern of what congregations are, which tend to be geographical and tend to be architectural. Mm-hmm. In other words, what the number of people that can support that building, they're one church. And now if we'd have another one, then it would be different. I wonder if we don't have better reason to start the other way of renting facilities and getting a smaller group that can be closer over a longer period of time and not have the burden of a big, huge place to take care of.
Well, and I know, of the early church.
Right, and what some congregations are doing today.
Now in our church, we have a pastor who is absolutely committed to this. Mm-hmm. He deals book and study book. I mean, he would only applaud and enable in every way he could. But as you have said, laity have been programmed a different way for 200 or 300 years or more.
I mean, as I said, I think that the laity and the congregation must want to be spiritually led, want to be in search for righteousness, and want to be motivated. In other words, it depends on just how people feel inside their heart to go to church. It determines what happens and what doesn't.
The neat thing about that is that we're always in for surprises, because that's the work of the Holy Spirit, and he can fool us every time.
I mean, our own self, we may not be up for it. Man, he does some awful, amazing, and crazy things. Crazy, you know, in the sense that we don't can't figure them out. I want to do one more thing here, just to write one thing on the board. I'm not going to give up on the seventh house. We've said that a couple of times. Although this looks bad, even when we say we aren't doing the good this part well yet, or whatever it may be, Leo Bustead reminds us there are 7,000 in Israel who have not bowed their knee to Baal. There are people doing these things. They are doing, you know, we're saying all that again, that we are affirming, I'm not saying for anybody else other than myself, that we all believe that that stuff is still going on. And it's a way now of making it better and more intense and giving more people that possibility. Just so we understand that. I wouldn't want it to end up in just ain't it terrible kind of thing.
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, in a sense, I'm a little bit suspicious that the church is now institutionally trying to, or figuring out how to take credit for what's going on anyway, which is okay.
Yeah.
I'll promote that. But that final thing, of course, is going on. We're all out there.
Sure.
Now the church is saying, we need to get a piece of that action, or how can we enable that to happen?
Or how can we be supportive?
Yeah.
Nothing else. Yeah. Or how can those people who are already doing it, who may even be better at it, if they are in touch with doing it. They may not even know they're doing it, and maybe raising their consciousness is all we'd have to do. And if that's a helpful thing, and I think many instances it would be, just like that fellow I talked about yesterday who said, well, what does it got to do with the congregation? He said nothing. Well, I don't think that's true. I think it had a lot to do with the congregation, but he didn't know it. And I would have liked to see him feel stronger about what the congregation had to do with his understanding of his job.
This thing of reaching potential, I think, like you're saying, the people out there that are doing the job but don't know it, just the pat on the back or the support, not telling them how to do the job or anything, but just appreciating that they're doing it, causes them to do a better job. There's something about success that generates more.
Deal suggested, you know, a little more institutionalized, and I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I think it would be good or bad. Even to, or your congregation, you pray for somebody who's doing that kind of ministry. Yeah. Tell them what to do. We know so-and-so is doing so-and-so, and we're glad about it, and we ask the power of God with that person in doing it. Or, as he said, well, if we give certificates of participation to a Sunday school teacher, why not sometime give participation to a village, city policeman? Who's trying to be the best kind of policeman he is in that kind of process too, or whatever.
I have a bolder suggestion.
Go ahead.
I bet you've seen this being done somewhere.
Go.
What if it would have to be a city where people travel to work that this would be needed. What if my pastor, knowing that I work at halfway across the city, we get in touch with the Lutheran pastor there, and what if pastors would take an active part in arranging for, in sort of an ecumenical way, for midweek kind of, whether they were discussion groups or Eucharistic feasts, or where people would come together around their vocation, or that would bring occupational groups together in the area closest to where you work, and that this would be supported and affirmed by the clergy. We can do it ourselves, but it would be such a supportive gesture.
I know three things like that. One is the City Corp for a congregation that Caps mentioned in downtown New York, in uptown New York. 63rd and whatever, Madison Avenue, I guess it is, where the St. Peter's congregation is right in the middle of it all. They are there for that and are espousing it and trying in different ways to cause those meetings
around, you know, people who live up in New Rochelle and everything else, when they're there to get together around either issues or groups of people. Another one is a Christian group that meets in Chicago. I've never been to any of their meetings. I've heard of them meeting regularly for breakfast. I know of two pastors in Chicago. One is Dean Luking, the other one is Don Bolster, both of whom have about every 2 months a breakfast for their guys, their people, men, women and men, who work in the loop. And they have breakfast out there. Another one of the pastors that I know spends time with his people in their place for a period of time. Nothing more than, I mean, not finding out what you're doing or checking up on you or even learning much about it, but just to be there, to know the environment that you're in. You're in this big tall building, or you're in this huge factory, or you're in this little cubby hole or whatever it is. He sees you. As we commented about your congregation yesterday, where, for those of you who aren't here, they have this huge map in which all the places that the people live, all the members of their congregation live. And then another kind of thing on that, where those people work. And a third one, where they are inclined to do their leisure time.
And where they go to church.
And where they go to church. It just goes all over the place. And I think that it gives this pastor a sense of you know, the loop as being part of his parish, this suburban pastor that I'm talking about. And your map, I think, helps in doing a similar thing. I think that's pretty sharp.
Along that line, I have challenged our congregation to invite the pastors to their place of work,
mm-hmm.
because I know in our former parish that was very helpful in several instances for my husband to understand the person that mm-hmm. he was having trouble understanding. When he saw where he worked, it made sense.
Sure. Surely part of an understanding. Someone else.
We don't even know what our pastors do between Monday and Friday. I mean, they have a work out there too.
Sure.
That would help us also be supportive of, in a sense, their role as lay off.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Of course. Sitting with them as they study, going on a call with them, or better yet, going to a hospital with them. I think you'll be a lot of understanding, a lot more. And I don't mean just, you know, end up being pro-clergy or something like that, but just a breath of what goes on in the name of the parish. Taking Eucharist to someone who has been away from the parish for 6 months or whatever it is.
I've never thought that my pastor had very much free time. And so although I think it's a terrific idea, the pure mechanics and practicality of the whole thing, poor minister, he already has so many people in his parish. He's lucky to call them all by name. He gets up early in the morning to visit. He has, I don't know how many required meetings to attend to,
mm-hmm.
and all those things.
I think deal is, or maybe it's not deal, but I think we should question whether or not our pastor should have to attend all those meetings. I think maybe deal is one.
Yes.
So in the process of this, maybe we discover that as laity, we could do lots of their work so that we could free them up to do something that we can't do.
That's true. My contention too would be that even a few people of the parish knowing, if they wouldn't be everybody, and certainly not everybody even would be interested in visiting with a pastor or doing some things, I think that would change it. Just as I think a pastor with 1,200 members isn't going to get around and see everybody, and I think it would be silly even to consider that as a possibility. My contention, and that grew out of this study, that if the pastor got to know one of his well, other than out of a job, you know, and some thing, I believe it would change his ministry. I don't mean say make it glorious or whatever it is, but that I believe would change his ministry.
Then you could go further and say if each lay person got to know one other lay person.
Exactly. I believe that.
But we are so programmed not to know our husbands too well. I'm not so sure that would be particularly effective. We're so afraid of being judged and for being for somebody to really know all of our weaknesses, that that's very difficult.
And I add to that the other side of that coin. I think that's a great fear. I think another fear, almost as equal, is the fear of knowing another person and knowing their weakness and their need for us or whatever else it may be. I think that's almost equally a fearsome thing as letting somebody else know yourself.
Unless that person stay that 3 years old.
Yes, yes.
But contrary to what I hear so much at Holden, just because the possibilities are so slight and the risk might not be so great, that doesn't mean we have to toss it out. Let's be with the 7,000.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Again, I think I my understanding of what Holden is about, and certainly what I understand John Strom's commitment to, is that if that isn't possible, to work through what we have without getting rid of everything, if it isn't possible to take something like that and move with it, then he says, I don't want the job, you know, and I don't want Holden, I don't want to be part of it. It's predicated on that possibility.
My pastor just walked in. But PK is, can I speak for you for a minute?
Sure. I don't know what's going on.
Okay. Some of us really very much want this to work. I know I want it so much that I just won't accept the possibility that it won't. Because I feel if there are even four or five of us, that that's enough. I mean, Jesus had 12 and one of them was a real dropout. So I don't think you should try, I don't think one should try to start too big or with too big grand a plan. We really just started with PK and Beth inviting those who wanted to. And I think we have maybe 20 the first year, 15? So it was open to the whole congregation, but just, it was really like God's on our side because the right size group came. And it remained a controllable size, meaning that everyone can feel a part of it. But by no means do all of us, or probably even any of us in that group, which is maybe about four or five times now, yet no one. I guess I was a little bit afraid of things that are going to be grand and real.
I've written to many lesson plans, but they're beautiful. That's right. Whatever's said here, yeah, it's so important to be processed by each of us into our own being and what we are capable of even absorbing or taking along. I guess that's the way I feel about a book. If I get an idea out of a book, I go around saying that's a great book. And somebody says, gee, didn't you read that chapter? And that was really lousy. And I have to go back and say, oh yeah, man, that chapter was lousy, but I got my idea out of the book. I think that's sort of great. Or if I go to a lecture, one of the things that Walt Capp said this morning really hung with me, and I'm going to be working on that. That might be Holden for me this time. I don't know, but you know, that might be the one thing, and I'll be really glad about it. And it won't come out the way Walt said it today, but I mean, it'll be processed through me, and I would hope that everybody here would, you know, if grandiose things might be said or very small things are said, they all ought to got to be processed through us and filtered into our own lives and through into those situations back there. They may turn out bigger than we ever dreamed, but they also might be just, again, one person meeting one person and going with it.